And welcome back to the Edge Radio broadcast. In the studio, we have with us this evening Stephen Schroeder. Stephen, say hello.
Hello.
Stephen Schroeder. Stephen Schroeder, we were talking last week about the information that you have personally gathered in your attempt to expose the forces of paganism and its connection and roots within the masonry type of people. And I never did understand why the Masons even, the building stuff that they do, it sounds like that they were hiding behind the idea of building buildings. Is that what you're getting? And in fact, they had a much sinister plan?
That's right. The Masons pride themselves as being builders, but you got the, like I said, the esoteric and... the esoteric knowledge is the speculative Freemasonry, and their object is, like the ancient alchemist, is to change base metals into gold. Their object was to change men into gods, and building these superstructures was a vital part, being these were the dwelling places of the pagans' pantheon and were the gods and goddesses.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. This sounds like the gods and goddesses run all over now. You say they're infused. The worship of gods and goddesses is infused in our society now.
A god, and not very many people realize that the god that is displayed on the great seal of authority is not the god of the Bible. It's actually a god named Jupiter, and the Novus Ordo Seclorum is the New World Order, and the Anacoptis is taken from a prayer to the god Jupiter itself to favor their undertaking. So your great seal of authority, which is basically showing you where they get their authority from, is an actual prayer, and it is actually to a specific deity, and it is actually to a specific pagan deity. And the book that I have is just documentation after documentation of evidence of the religious agenda of the New World Order to establish polytheism over monotheism and to reestablish the pagan pantheon to its proper places of honor.
Wow. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to be putting that to their proper place of dishonor. I would say more than that, but I don't know if I mentioned this to the listeners last week, but you actually have gone so far as to desecrate some of these pagan statues here in Indianapolis. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it seems that writing letters to the editor of a paper is not effective, especially when you find out that the Indianapolis Star is not telling what the facts are, simply because they can't without showing that they're accomplices in this. They're the ones who donated this Pan statue. The whole point here is there's desecration going on downtown of the cross and the Ten Commandments by the pagans. There's various... I have all kinds of different examples of where the cross and the Ten Commandments have been intentionally desecrated by the pagans. Mm-hmm. And you can beg and you can plead and you can write letters to the editor, but it falls on deaf ears. And if mm-hmm. they have if they don't care about desecrating that which belongs mm-hmm. to God and is sacred, their pagan deities, their illegal mm-hmm. pagan deities, are fair game.
All right, this is incredible too, everybody, because right before the show I was talking to Stephen Schroeder, and Stephen, you said that you in the statue here in Indianapolis, you actually went to this god, which is on, is it on state property?
Well, you have five blocks downtown that's dedicated to as a war memorial, and that's what they use to disguise mm-hmm. these pagan temples and all these pagan idols and mm-hmm. images. It's state property, but it's federal funded because it's a national, it's federal property. It's a felony. Let's put it this way: mm-hmm. if you desecrate any of their pagans on property
yeah,
downtown,
but yeah, okay. So it was on kind of quasi state federal property then, and you actually broke the arms off the Pan God statue. Is that right?
That's right. If you go into the if you go and research what Pan is or who Pan is, take it back to its early beginnings. In Babylon, his name was Enlil, the 50. In Egypt, his name was Min, M-I-N. And I would suggest everybody go to a dictionary or some kind of reference and look up M-I-N, the Egyptian god of the underworld, the god of death. And you'll see that is the god of America, and that is Pan. The Greeks made Pan. Pan means all. Mm-hmm. Pan is the universal symbol of paganism. And so we have a state who has given a very prime real estate spot to a pagan deity. And like when religions start vying for public space, that's when you have conflicts. And we have the pagans who have, you know, presented themselves as some kind of minority non-mainstream religion that's being persecuted by the Christian mm-hmm. Majorities in the capital and whatnot, but just to the contrary.
Okay. Now, didn't you work for the federal building?
Yeah, I was in the Air Force as a security specialist in the Air Force and was stationed overseas in Turkey during the Iran hostage crisis time period. And then when I got out of that, I came back to Indiana and got a job at the federal building as a federal security officer supervisor for 7 years, and had no problem, and it was a great job, and everything was wonderful until I wrote a letter to the editor in response to President Bush Sr.'s declaration of a New World Order.
So it was when you veered into politics, somebody was reading what you were writing, and it got back to the feds, huh?
Well, I wrote a letter to the editor talking about the New World Order and what I would stumbled onto. And my boss, which was Frank Anderson, told me that I wasn't allowed to write any letters like that if I wanted to stay employed. And I naturally wanted to contest that because I believed in freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of press. And if it didn't affect my job performance, I couldn't see how I could say that I couldn't do that. So I was warned. But then there was a radio station that invited me as a guest speaker to come talk about the New World Order. And I guess that was the nail, the straw that broke the camel's back. And I was terminated without just cause.
Terminated without just cause. Sounds like they wanted to terminate with extreme prejudice, but somehow they held back on that part of it. But so when you broke off the arms of this Pan God on state property, they did not prosecute you because they knew they were violating the Constitution. Is that right?
Well, I don't think they wanted to admit they're violating the Constitution. But the thing is, they didn't want to make it a public matter. I was wanting, just like the Ten Commandments, that was that the state kept. Capital that was desecrated. I wanted the people to know about it. I wanted the people to make the decision. I wanted the people to be educated in what was going on. Unfortunately, we only have one newspaper here in this state, and it's unfortunately controlled by those who are the ones who's in conspiring to overthrow the Constitution.
Now you know I'm going to like that. I'm going to like that when you talk about conspire, because we guess that's a root word for conspiracy. But things stop becoming a conspiracy when you have the facts. You're saying the Indianapolis Star donated this pagan statue?
That's right, on the back of the Pan statue. Well, the one that is there now is not the same that was there. It's missing a few anatomical parts because they figured it was a good idea not to have a Pan with a fully erect penis in the park anymore, because they saying that was what the problem was. On the back of this statue was donated by the Indianapolis Star News, and that's why they have a bias in reporting and making the issue seem like it's my mental stability instead of what the real issue here is, that paganism is being given special preference. So
the Star donated a pagan statue with certain anatomical parts there for all to see. Now, that sounds, doesn't that type of thing come from the fertility goddesses? I mean, do you think there's some sort of connection between, say, dark, maybe people getting in a circle or pentagram, maybe within the Star or the government or whatever? I mean, don't these things have power in their view?
Absolutely. It's their bread and butter. That's why they believe in it, because it is effective and it is working for them. It is all about sorcery and high magic, and you can debate whether George Washington was a Christian or whether he was not. The bottom line here is he was the most worshipful master of Freemasonry, and currently is referred to as that as being the first at war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen. And I'll debate it with anybody. It's any kind of expert in the field that Freemasonry is nothing more than the religion of Bell worship, which is a fertility religion, a bad fertility religion, to where the man was representative as the sun god and the female was representative as the moon goddess, and the female would be in the superior position, and their unification would represent the male and God in sacred union. And as a result of fertility cult, naturally you'd have a lot of babies being born, but those were used for human sacrifice.
Well, why is it that the government gets away with that? Because it does seem that every government and state office building has some sort of god there, whether it's Zeus or some god of war, some woman with a sword or whatever, from maybe Diana or whatever. Aren't those considered religious relics?
Not only are they considered religious relics, it's just a confirmation showing the kind of deception and the power of their spell working. Take, for instance, the Capitol, the House chambers, where the ACLU has sued the House Speaker for using a specific name of deity in a prayer. On the mural in the House chambers, you have a depiction of at least six pagan deities that are mentioned by name, specific names, in their tour guides, from Ceres to Juno to Apollo to Janus to the Triple Goddess. And the painting itself is entitled The Apotheosis of Indiana. And the apotheosis means the changing of something or the making of something into a god or goddess. So you have a painting that is talking about the state of Indiana being made into a goddess. And you have the depiction of all these pagan gods and goddesses on a mural that is a lot major violation than simple prayers. And the reason I'm opposed to prayers in the House chamber is because I think that's a bad place to have any kind of prayers, generic or not, in a temple that is built and dedicated for the purpose of glorifying the pagan pantheon.
Okay, so you have one of the reasons you're on this show here. Of course, we're broadcasting from the central city here in Indianapolis. You're saying that basically our city was laid out by the Masons. Now, was it the same Masons or just Masons in general that laid out the city of Indianapolis, and what's the connection with Washington, D.C.?
Well, Washington, D.C. was a special place and was, during, like I said, the Spanish Inquisition, they found some information about this continent over here and some special places that was special to the original inhabitants here. Special mounds, special places of earth energy. The capital, where the capital sits, is where the solstices and the equinoxes are reconciled. If you look at the Great Seal and the Federal Triangle and the image of the eye, you'll see that is a top view. If you were looking down on Washington, in the Federal Triangle, you'll see the capital is at the top and the obelisk is in the middle. The obelisk, if you look down on it, is a circle with a dot in the middle of it. And the capital is a crescent moon. It's the feminine and the masculine united in this Federal Triangle, making up the image of the eye, making up the image of the god. And unfortunately, the image of their god is a city state, just like the old world order, where you have it's the city or the state declared to be a god as well as its founder.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that the new boss is same as the old boss, and you're saying that boss is Lucifer?
I'm saying the God of the Old Testament is the same God of the New Testament. Therefore, the adversary of the Old Testament is no doubt the adversary of the New Testament. The story is all the same. It's just names and places have been changed, but the story remains the same. And it's time for us to wake up and realize, and for Israel to wake up and realize, the enemy is among her.
And if somebody were to wake up that's listening to this broadcast, it may be entrenched in paganism as a result of their teaching and their culture. What are you saying they should do?
Do what the Bible tells you to do. Do what the Word of God tells you to do. Our last final instruction is to be separate, to come out from among them. That's the problem right now. We are not being separate. We are incorporated with them. We can't see the evil. We're under the spell. We are celebrating pagan holidays. We're accommodating pagan accommodations of their gods and goddesses. Tolerating. It's that toleration. It's the voice of approval, and we have to be separate. Until we become separate, we won't be seeing that we're sleeping with the beast.
Mm. Well, give me a depiction of a person who has been this spell, as you put it, cast on them by believing. I think you said it so good last week, and I really like that. The mixing of the mixing of the holy and the unholy, was it, or was it the
pure
and the profane, the pure and the profane? What does that person look like?
Well, he looks like a normal Joe, and unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who know the truth. Once you expose the truth and you show them the truth, are unwilling to accept it. And I don't know if it's the ostrich principle or what it is, or the fear of the reality of it. But for the most part, the people, they don't see the evil. I mean, this is like the Ten Commandments at the state capitol. For 33 years, it stayed there unchallenged, and no doubt people walked by and saw that. And the only thing they was thinking is how nice the state's promoting our religion, not realizing that the Ten Commandments had been modified and been desecrated with the pagan image of the breasted sun goddess. It's the deception and the spell working that is effective, and people just don't see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the I guess when you're talking about the Christians, you're talking about the Judeo-Christian heritage. Why wouldn't Christians in this state, and those listening to the show, obviously on the radio here in the flagship station in Indianapolis, why wouldn't it bother them that their most holy commandments has been desecrated and mixed with the profane? Why doesn't it bother them, or did they even know?
I don't think they even know. Like across the street from the federal building, you have what's called the Federal Obelisk, and on that Federal Obelisk, you have a four tablets, and two of the tablets, they're about 8 foot tall and about 4 foot wide. And on one of the tablets is the cross, and on the other side is a tablets of the Ten Commandments. You see the tablets on the obelisk, and of course people walk by and they think, well, how nice they're portraying the cross and the Ten Commandments. What they don't realize are those cross and Ten Commandments are being displayed on the erect penis of the God of Earth. Now that's a pretty big offense, and that's a pretty big desecration. If you look up what an obelisk is, the four-sided shaft, it represents the erect penis of the God of Earth. And I don't think that's an appropriate place to be displaying the cross and Ten Commandments. And if you look at the cross that's displayed on this Federal Obelisk, you'll see on the cross are two images of the snake goddess, the consort of Bel Ashtaroth. So you have the cross sandwich between graven images of the snake goddess and the erect penis of the god of Earth. It's unbelievable. I think ignorance, people are destroyed for lack of knowledge.
Why would the federal government at all have any sort of pagan gods on any of their buildings? I mean, why wouldn't they put, just say, like, you know, George Washington or Benjamin Franklin? Why don't they stick to real people? Why do they always got to revert to the gods of the Greeks and the Romans?
Because they believe that's where their source and their power comes from. If you read Revelation 13, the serpent, the final deal made to man was, make the image, make the kingdom. And he will give them power and authority to rule. It was in obedience. That's what the revived Roman Empire is. The New World Order is nothing new. If you look at Ecclesiastes 9, it talks about there is nothing new under the sun. It's talking about there is nothing new. So the New World Order is nothing more than the Old World Order. And the Old World Order got their power and authority from the pagans and the pantheon. And that their gods and goddesses are the ones who they attribute to as far as giving them their power. So they have to acknowledge them in order to have this power.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you're saying then that, of course, we've talked about the Masons in Washington, D.C. And what is this national road? Isn't there a road, the national road, for those who don't know the geography of the United States? It talks about making a road directly from Washington, D.C. to Indianapolis. They call it the National Road. For here, locally, we know it as U.S. 40. Washington Street. What is the significance of that road?
That road is actually the path of Ra. That's the path of the sun that it makes from its starting point, from the point where the solstices and equinoxes are reconciled. And it travels westward on this path to this sacred spot that even Alexander the Great was looking for, and it was a crossroads of Ishtar built on a sun tablet or a sun square. And the Washington Street is 125 feet wide. It's wider than all the other streets in Indianapolis and Indiana. It's 125 feet wide, which is kind of odd when you look at a dollar bill and a quarter, and they both have the images of Washington on it. Washington Street's 125 foot wide, and it's for the path of the sun, for the traveling of the sun, and its founding deity, which would be Washington.
Okay. All right. We got a question come in on a fast blast, and the question to you, Stephen Schroeder, is there any link to South Bend as far as the Indianapolis being the gateway to hell? They say that they have a gigantic Scottish Rite temple, and of course, those here locally know that Indianapolis has a gigantic Scottish Rite temple. So what about that?
Well, the main points are Washington and Indianapolis as far as the process of apotheosis. But every community, you'll probably have a Masonic lodge there. And if you have a Masonic lodge there, then there's other things hidden in your state or city that go along with Freemasonry and bell worship. And it's just waiting for you to discover them. There's several things out there. There's a multitude of things out there. But you can't see them because people don't understand that this is a spell. And the spell is easy to make, and it's by combining the pure and the profane, like a thesis and antithesis, to produce a synthesis. Mm-hmm. But the way to break the spell is to stand up in opposition. If you say, I do not want the state desecrating and profaning, I guarantee you, your scales will fall off your eyes. You'll see things as they really are, and you'll start discovering a lot of mysteries.
Well, let me ask you then, what, you know, you talk about the Scottish Rite. Is that because, by definition, they're doing some kind of weird rite, some kind of occultic spell casting working or whatever?
They're all involved in sorcery and black magic, Egyptian high magic and sorcery. And it sounds kind of odd probably to listeners talking about sorcery, but if you read like the first story after the stoning of Stephen in the Bible, you'll find out that a whole city was under the spell of one man named Simon, a sorcerer. So the Bible is just riffed with examples of sorcery and high magic and the occult. And it's a real thing. If you believe in the Bible, then you also have to believe on the other side that there is a cult, there is sorcery, there is high magic, and there are people who practice it.
Well, our gigantic Scottish Rite temple is just a stone's throw away from the Indianapolis Star. You think any of those people there are members of that?
If they're not members of that, they're a member of another organization under a different name. That's like a front, but they're all, you basically have two types of people down here, the sons of light and the sons of darkness, the sons of flesh and the sons of the will of God. Mm-hmm. You have two types of people down here, and most of them, if not all of them, are involved in some kind of secret organization.
Well, you know, when you talk about the Christian Bible, talking about how the devil rules the high places, and I know the Indianapolis Star has no competition here in the local area, so the dissemination of information is strictly relegated to the Indianapolis Star, so they exude a lot of power over this local area, and so, you know, there's nobody really to call them on the table. But when you were desecrating the Pan God, you could not get arrested, as that's what you told me, and after three times, why is it? Because there's a mixing of the religious or the breaking of the Constitution. Why did they not arrest you?
Simply for the same reason why they didn't immediately arrest me at the state capitol when I destroyed the desecrated Ten Commandments there. They do not want it to become a court situation where it becomes Indiana history, where it becomes documented fact, where people can research and find out the exact sins of the state. They do not want to go into a courtroom and have it on public record that the state violated the constitutional law by putting up a statue of a pagan deity, even the devil. And they don't want the controversy. They'd rather go away and keep on replacing it. It was one of those things where they say they want to catch you. We had a showdown with them. I didn't show up. And this is the funny thing, okay? It got to the point to where I finally got a hold of the Indianapolis Star reporter, Will Higgins. And I said, it's time for the people to know what the facts are. I'll make a deal with you. I'll show you the pan arms. If you just write the story and let the people know that this is a conflict between pagans and Protestants, and Protestants are challenging the state's illegal activity and its preference given to paganism. Mm-hmm. He agreed to do that, and I showed him the arms, and of course, they didn't do anything about it, and the story was all, you know, pretty much watered down. Yeah. It got to the point to where it had to be removed, and they don't want to do anything about it. They just want to replace it. Mm-hmm. They don't want to take it to court. Like I've said, I've lost my freedom before. I've made my stand before. They're not going to desecrate the cross and Ten Commandments, and like I told them, you remove the cross and the Ten Commandments off of the obelisk, we'll leave Pan alone. And until then, the Protestants are not going to roll over.
Well, Stephen Schroeder, that's phenomenal, because you have gone well beyond the realm of what most Christians would do. Most of them would do exactly like you said earlier, write a letter to the editor, they would go to their church and pray, they would have a bean supper to raise some money maybe for some flyers. I mean, that's about it when it comes to Christianity striking against the heart of the beast. Is it because they really don't believe the gospel where it says that that the disciples went out, and as they were being thrown in jail and as they were being stoned, that they were followed by signs and wonders? And today's church, as far as I can tell, the only signs and wonders they've got is the wonders made up by Benny Hinn and his ilk. And so isn't that really what the case is? They really don't believe what they're reading when it says that signs and wonders will follow them when they stand up for the truth?
Well, they're in their comfort zone, and they like being there. And the bottom line is, faith without works is dead. When God told Gideon to go out and topple the idols and the altars of Baal, he didn't tell Gideon, why don't you pray about it, why don't you, you know, get people together and let's talk about it, whatnot. He told him to go out at nighttime and to destroy these altars. Okay, it's one of those things. Faith without works is dead. If something is wrong, if something is in defiance to God, if something is standing up and desecrating what's yours, if people don't stand up and do something about it, it's faith without works. They can pray till they're blue in the face. Right now, God's not even hearing the prayers, obviously, and the church is a prime example of that.
Well, give me an example. Did Jesus ever strike back against the paganism in the church?
Well, everybody was saying, you know, Christ was a pacifist and this, that, and the other. But from what I read, when they desecrated the house and made it a house of the money changers, he fashioned a whip. In other words, he took his hands and made a weapon and went in there and drove them out. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with chastisement, especially when you're talking about those who would seek to destroy. It's a matter of self-defense.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you've given a number of examples, and I know that what the history is, that what Paul was let down in a basket of the city, John the Baptist exposed the sins of whoever was cheating on his brother's wife or whatever. But I mean, but today's Christians, they're not really they're really not together. If they're not fighting each other, they're fighting to find out what color carpet they want in the church, and then there's a church split, as holy as that is and as spiritual as they get anymore. Let me ask you something. When you talk about desecrating the pan god, how is that done? Does that make the devil mad when you do that?
I'm sure it doesn't make him too awful happy. It's one of those things that if the state will tolerate the pagans from desecrating and profaning that which is sacred to us, they must sit on their hands and allow us to do the same thing. And it's just a matter of letting them know what it feels like. Unless they can, you know, do the right thing. It's amazing. You know, it's like national news. If you splash water on a Koran, that's desecration. But you can display a cross or crucifix in a jar of urine, and that's art. And you can have a painting of Mary spread with elephant dung, and that's art. But if you splash a little water on a Koran, that's desecration. That's national news. We've got a cross and commandments that are desecration. desecrated with the images of pagan gods, and nobody's doing anything about it. Well, number one, because nobody's making an issue of it. The Star won't report on it because, well, they're accomplices to it. And so there is no other choice. It's just like the Ten Commandments. I exhausted every legal means there was to get the state to comply with its own constitutional laws, state and federal constitutional laws, and they refused to do it. Civil disobedience is a right, and it's not only a right, it's a duty.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I asked at least a couple guests before talking about when Thomas Jefferson said when such government becomes overbearing, it is the right of the people to throw off such government. But when let's get back to this, because this has to do with really Christians doing anything about something. They usually do nothing about everything. Wait a minute. Yeah, that was good. I got to rewind that. Hang on, everybody. Tell my program better. I got to remember that in the morning. How do you? You said that the state had intentionally desecrated the Ten Commandments, and the Christians in the community, on their way to their Sunday social, didn't care, didn't know. How is it they desecrated those commandments?
Well, number one, to modify the commandments, they removed the second commandment forbidding graven images. It's interesting. The second commandment is the only commandment that has a warning attached to it. And they removed that because, well, obviously it was to give preference to the Roman Catholic majority that's in Indiana. And so you had a religious display that was giving preference to the Roman Catholics because it was their version. And the excuse they used for removing the second commandment is because it sounds so much like the first commandment. Mm-hmm. But in order to have 10 commandments, they had to divide the 10th commandment, which is thou shalt not covet, and make it into two separate commandments. The 9th one says thou shalt not covet, and the 10th commandment says thou shalt not covet. So you have two commandments that say exactly the same thing. But yet that logic that they use for removing the second commandment is because it sounds like the first. I think I would pretty much, you know, keep the second commandment being the first three commandments apply to God. But the reason they removed the second commandment is because, well, they incorporate graven images in their worship.
Mm-hmm. How many years did the desecration by the state, the desecration of the Ten Commandments go by without the public noticing it?
Almost 33 years. It almost made it 33 years, but
33 and a half would have been a good number.
That was just, it didn't make it quite to 33 years. That's an awful long time, and it's interesting that the Supreme Court has allowed these monuments, these Ten Commandments, that have been saturated through the nation around the late 50s and early 60s to remain, but the Protestant versions that do not have graven images or haven't been modified, those are considered illegal. So the ruling coming out of the Supreme Court matches the Indiana Civil Liberties Union opinion that some Ten Commandments can stay and some Ten Commandments have to be removed. Everybody thinks that the ACLU is against the Ten Commandments. Originally, the first contest with the state about the Ten Commandments at the Capitol, the Indiana Civil Liberties Union, under Michael Gradison, refused to challenge it. They would not assist me in any way because the Ten Commandments were desecrated. They're not going to challenge it. It's just like the obelisk downtown. There's Ten Commandments there, and I've contacted the Civil Liberties Union about it, you know, 10 years ago, and they, even to this day, just last year I contacted them about it, and they refused to challenge it, yet they're the ones who removed it from the state capitol or prevented Governor O'Bannon from putting up a Protestant version that didn't have any graven images on it. They prevented that. But the only ones they'll challenge are the ones that aren't desecrated, oddly enough.
Hmm. All right, got this question in from the Fast Blast, and it's a question on this from here locally. It says, I've heard that there's a connection between a cult in Indiana before. Is there a connection between Diana and the statue of Pan in the downtown area? And is the name Indiana and or Indianapolis a cover for the goddess Diana in Diana's palace? Is that a cover? The idea that there was a lot of Indians here.
Yeah, they say Indianapolis means the capital of the Indian, but I don't know why they would give respect to somebody or that they, you know, use genocide on. It's all about paganism, and Diana is the goddess. And downtown on the Monument Circle, you have the same goddess. The goddess is known by many names: Ashtaroth, Ishtar, Astarte. There's just tons of different names. It's all the same goddess. And Indiana, in Diana's Panopolis, you had a Heliopolis, and it was the sun worship. And when you understand who Pan is and the god of earth is, it's the same kind of sun worship. And this is the capital of Pan. That's why Pan has got such prime real estate down there and why they refused to let him die. and it won't go away. And in Diana's Panopolis is what I like to term it as, because it just makes perfectly good sense when you see what it's all about.
In Diana Panopolis. All right. Well, I tell you what, everybody, there's your connection locally. And like I said, the connection nationally and worldwide, of course, is these kind of shenanigans. I'm sure that the occultism and paganism isn't relegated to our local area here and or Washington, D.C. in general. But, in fact, this probably is going around the world because I'm sure there's a sort of everybody's looking for the new world order. There must be some – you just don't turn a switch and you've got a new world order. What you have is a foundation that is being built. And then all of a sudden it's just there. And if they can desecrate the Ten Commandments right in front of everybody's nose for 33 years, there's a foundation being built, and no one really even knows it. I've got a question about that, though, Stephen Schroeder. You mentioned that the Second Commandment is the one that has the warning with it.
And the Second Commandment is the only commandment with a warning attached to it, talking about don't do this.
Okay, so it has a warning. With the whole abortion issue of killing babies in the womb, you know, by whether saline injection or suction machine or other kind of demonic devices they can come up with, God didn't. I haven't really seen a judgment. I'm not really asking for one. So wherever you are out there, God, we're not asking for judgment, but just a fact. We haven't seen judgment for that. And they've been killing babies for years and years. And as far as the pornography and all the other atrocities and the pedophilia in the Catholic Church, and the, not everyone in the Catholic Church, obviously, just the majority of the leaders there, I suppose, but in their group. But where is this judgment at? And why should we believe that God's going to judge because of the Second Commandment being desecrated if he hasn't apparently judged for the other?
That just goes to show you the mercifulness of our God. It's all about timing, and it's like the sins have piled up and become remembrance to God. It's one of those things, just because there's no earthquake today doesn't mean it's not coming tomorrow. It's one of those things that everything has a time and a place, and usually God always gives a warning before the destruction comes or the judgment comes, and that's what you can consider this.
And welcome back to the Edge Radio broadcast. I'm Daniel Lott, and right here in the studio with us, we have, in the heart of paganism, Indiana, Pinnapolis, we have Stephen Schroeder. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Well, you've said a lot of, you made a lot of connections so far. The infusion of gods and goddesses through all of our federal buildings and a lot of our state buildings, the dedications of statues and demonic looking. I mean, what? In fact, talk about demonic. What about those sort of looking ogre looking things that they have on top of buildings? Does that have anything to do with anything?
The builders had a lot of reasons for gargoyles and all the things that they do. That's not really that big of a thing when you can go downtown. I'd like to start giving tours to people, get together and go downtown and start pointing out some of these things and let them see firsthand and see some of the things that they've been hidden, and they'll understand gargoyles is like the least of their worries.
Mm-hmm. And we want to get your address up on our website, so after the show you want to give that to us and we can do that. Do you have any information people can get a hold of you? Like, you have an email address, you want to wait till after the show, give it out on the website?
I have. You can get me an email at protestantsep, protestantsep at yahoo. Mm-hmm. And I'll give out the address and later on the show.
All right, and if somebody has a question about paganism in their city or the obelisk or anything like that, do you normally return emails on that?
I'll return every email. If they want me to come to their church or their little group and sit and talk with them and debate and show them the facts and figures, I'd be more than happy to.
I'll tell you what, you're sure keeping our one of our creeds on the show here. As Chris Moore always says, the show's so hot, your radio may catch on fire. I tell you, what you've said so far is enough to set some brains on fire. In fact, we had a few objections last week when the father of our country was described in a completely different light, and we got a few nasty emails from that. But because people are set in their ways, and even if they have the truth, it's like they're in a their comfort zone will not allow some people to even contemplate. They won't even do the research to find out these things, although I think a lot of people would agree there's something wrong with society, with the way it's heading. There seems to be something behind events that seem to be moving us all in a direction, whether or not we like it or not. In fact, I remember somebody saying they had a vision of hell, and what they said was they saw a mass of people, and they were being pushed over the edge by the sheer mass of people, and so the sheer power of society and culture was pushing these people off the cliff into hell. And then they said that along the lines of this hell vision, there were people on either side of this gigantic throng, and they had their heads tilted down. And they said when they raised their head up to tell somebody in the crowd the truth, which would have pulled them out of this throng, that a demon would come by and lightly touch them on the head, and they would immediately stop talking and bow their heads again. And that typically is the way Christians respond now. If they get the least a little bit of resistance about the truth, if they discover the truth and they change their belief just a little bit, there's enough people in their sphere to come around, just bap them on the head ever so lightly, and they'll instantly shut up because they just want to get along.
Well, you know, not only do you have the comfort zone, you unfortunately have a spiritual ego to where a lot of people won't admit that they were deceived or are deceived because then they question their spirituality. If everybody, almost everybody that's in the church, you talk about the end times and they realize this is the end times. However, they don't understand with that comes the rest of the baggage with the end times, and that is that there will be strong delusion, there'll be deception as never was, that it could even deceive the elect if possible. And unfortunately, people don't realize that that comes with the end times, and they're not looking for deception. And when you do the research for them, and you do the homework for them, and you show it to them, they still won't. And that this goes to show that the spell working is a lot stronger than they realize, and that it is a possibility. And what they need to do is get rid of their spiritual egos to where they're so self-righteous that they can't see, or they can't be deceived, or can't be stumbled. They need to realize that the Word of God is true, and when He says there is going to be strong deception, to start looking around to see if there is deception around. And this is it. If you can find a better one, I'd be more interested in
spiritual ego. That's an interesting topic. Hey, in the book, A Divine Revelation of Hell, Mary Kay Baxter described what she termed as different gateways to hell around the planet. And she says she was taken up out of the body at night by Jesus himself and was shown these entry points. And she said that these tubes or these sort of cones which above the earth, she said she could see them at different points all around the earth. And she said inside of these gateways, these tunnels down into hell were infused in the sidewalls were demonic spirits and snakes and different things like that. So would you say that in the spiritual realm, Indianapolis is such a gateway?
Absolutely. If you look at the way that Indianapolis was designed, you have the crossroads of Ishtar. Okay, at this crossroads, the reason it's the crossroads of America, they say it's because it's in the midst of, you know, the country or whatnot. But the crossroads itself is a sacred union, and it's referred to, the monument is referred to as a monument to the sacred union. That sacred union is the union of the moon's meridian, which is why you have Meridian Street, and the sun's zenith during the equinox, which is why you got Washington Street. And that's a sacred union between the sun and the moon. It's a sacred union between the goddess on top of the male obelisk. It's a sacred union of the goddess of war with the god of war. The Mars Square is the foundation of it. It's a crossroads of Ishtar, and it was built on three talismans. The Northwest Territories were all laid out in a 6x6 mile square pattern. In compliance with the dragon's mandate to lay the foundation. The foundation of a 6x6 square totals up to 666. That's the interesting thing about this sun square. And on top of the sun square, then they put a 2x2 square, which is called the devil square because it's not the typical magic square. And out of that 2x2 square, they designed a 1 mile square in the middle using an ancient Babylonian formula of the Tablet of Destiny. So you have these Tablets of Destiny, which are a really... secret. Well, the alchemists say it's the philosopher's stone, and it's actually the foundation of Indianapolis downtown where they put the monument. So you have this Babylonian tablet of destiny, this Babylonian horoscope, actually being a 1 mile square downtown designed as this Babylonian tablet. So this is where it's at. It's just the foundation of Indianapolis.
Yeah, and I noticed by as I go over the forum, I look at the edgeam.com forum, and for one, I just want to congratulate everybody for their very good looking avatars, and whoever put up the avatar with the cat and the gun underneath the chin wasn't real happy about that one. So we're going to find out who that was. I think it's somebody real close here, maybe in the studio. But we'll take a look at that. And listen, I've got a question then. For those locally that don't believe that there is such paganism going on here, I guess they're not aware that Indianapolis has something called Pagan Pride Day. What do you know about that?
Well, that's kind of interesting. When you understand what's going on here, let's get back to the basics. There was last year there was a Pagan Pride Day, and they held it on the Indiana War Memorial grounds, which is kind of interesting that the state would accommodate the pagans in such a way when there was no really other church organizations allowed to be down there. But you understand why the pagans have a reason to be proud, because all these five blocks downtown are rife with the pagan gods and goddesses in the temples and what have you, and it's the interesting thing. I think the reason the state is accommodating pagans so well and promoting their cause as the persecuted minority is a simple fact that Stephen Goldsmith, when he was mayor at the city county building, he tried a little experiment. And this is where it all gets back to the faith-based initiatives and Goldsmith's role in all of this. In the city county building lobby, there was a Christmas tree, and he thought it would be a good idea to have a Jewish menorah in the lobby. And not only was it just a menorah for a religious display, he had a rabbi come in for a few weeks and perform religious ceremonies, lighting candles, singing prayers, what have you. That became an open forum to where Goldsmith was in the paper saying he thought it was a good idea if all religions would have religious displays in the city county building lobby. And sure enough, here comes a huge wooden cross. And I also had a display put in there as the Second Commandment. I felt like it being the state removed the Second Commandment from the Ten Commandments off the state capitol, when I had the Second Commandment displayed there in the lobby. Unfortunately, here's what the problem was. A pagan came in and wanted to display a pentagram in the lobby next to the cross, next to the commandments, next to the menorah, next to the Christmas tree. And unfortunately, Ben's Goldsmith thought it was a good idea to everybody to have equal access. That meant that the witch could actually have her religious ceremonies, light black candles, perform a black Sabbath in the city county building lobby. Well, the plug was quickly pulled on that, simply because you can imagine the outrage of the citizens knowing that here in the city county building lobby, you had religious displays of what it really looked like when the state promotes all religions equally. You had a circus type atmosphere to where you had the pagan and the profane standing side by side with the sacred and pure.
Wow, and I tell you what, you're making it very clear. Now, you're saying for those listeners, you need to get this. When you mix the profane or the pagan with the pure or the holy, you say a spell is produced. And it's a spell that blinds people from the truth?
It's one of the most powerful spells. It's the spell of strong delusion. It's a spell that not only blinds you, but binds you. It's like the Hegelian dialect. It's where you take a thesis and an antithesis, and you combine them together, and it produces a synthesis.
Okay.
When you take the pure and the profane, and you combine them together, not only do you desecrate the pure and water and pollute it and all that, it produces a spell to where you believe a lie.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Edge Radio Broadcast. Yes, Indiana wants you, but do we want you to help us celebrate paganism in this fine city? We dropped some bombshells in the first hour with Stephen Schroeder incriminating the Indianapolis Star, but you know, evidence is plain. They donated pagan statues. What kind of occultism is going on here? We're going to find out some more. If it wasn't hot enough for you in the first hour, we've got another whole hour with Stephen Schroeder. Stephen Schroeder, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have all kind of different questions here coming in on the Fast Blast. A lot of people want to know if they've got paganism in their city. What's a telltale sign that somebody's city, whether wherever it is involved in paganism? Is there some sort of way to tell? I mean, do the people, do they walk around like zombies? Do they fail to pass decency laws? What can you tell a city that's steeped in paganism and mysticism?
Well, usually if you have any kind of god or goddess, you do some research, find out who founded the city and what they how they laid it out. You can find out about paganism. But usually desecration is usually a telltale sign that you got some kind of a pagan problem in your community.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, as you said, that you struck back and you desecrated their statues, is that a way to offset the paganism and give power back to the creator or to his intentions or to the holiness of the area?
Well, it is a contest down here, and it would be a sad thing to have the pagans pretty much desecrate everything that's sacred to you and make the laws that it does and without regard to the Christianity. When you talk about Christians and persecution, you say, well, Christians aren't being persecuted, but you think about it. What greater persecution is there than to take something that is sacred and holy and means so much to you and publicly put it up for public display and desecration?
Mm-hmm.
What great persecution is there?
Mm-hmm. Now, I was reading on the Edge forum. It looks like a couple of people who was thinking about coming in Indianapolis, but now after they've heard this broadcast, they may never come here.
You never can tell. If you come here, you better they're come here for a reason. Other than that, it's not a real good tourist draw. Just like the whimsical statues they had, that they claimed was a tourist draw. There's nothing here to see.
Well, let's talk about that. Those what you called whimsical statues that were placed on the Indiana War Memorial. Without getting too graphic, what about those statues?
Well, this is during the Pagan Pride Day. We went down there, and there was these whimsical, the Indianapolis Star called them whimsical statues, making it sound like it was something that you could take your kids to see. And there was a couple of statues that were kind of offensive. The one that I found most offensive was there was these two little beings. It was construction workers, and they had their hard hats on, but they was embracing and caressing and kissing. And it's like these two construction, it looks like two guys kissing. And you look down, and sure enough, between their legs, there's their hanging phallics, and embraced and kissing and caressing, and having two little statues of, well, homosexual statues. To be called whimsical by the Indianapolis Star is one thing. To have them on the steps of a war memorial that is supposed to be there to honor and respect the war dead is kind of an odd thing in itself. It's like the Indianapolis Star having its front page, having its scripture talking about where there's liberty and there's God and all this other stuff, and being the same ones that promote paganism.
You know, that's true. I saw those statues, those naked construction workers on the Indiana War Memorial. And if you're a veteran, I'm so sorry. I bet that many of our veterans weren't here locally didn't even know about those statues. Certainly the Christian community didn't know about them, but I suppose somebody must have raised some kind of question on it to cause in and remove it. But how they got there to begin with on the Indiana War Memorial, and what naked construction workers meant, homosexual construction workers meant on the grounds of the sacred monument, supposedly to the veterans of this fine state, but I never did make that connection. And that just goes to show you how things can happen in plain view. And your community, your religious community, doesn't do anything. In fact, that kind of brings us to the Indianapolis Baptist Temple. That was, for those of you listening worldwide, you may not know that that probably was that one of the first churches that was seized by the federal government.
This is the interesting thing and the tragedy of what's actually taking place here in Indiana. What had happened was Indiana was caught funneling money to the Roman Catholic Archdiocese, taxpayer dollars. They were caught. The ICLU even filed charges against it. That was one of the reasons why they had to come up with this faith-based initiative where the state could start funneling money to religious organizations, because they've been caught doing it all along. And that's where Goldsmith came into play in Indiana, where it came into play. Goldsmith was groomed, as far as his experiment goes, to try to find a way around constitutional law, not only federal constitutional law, but state constitutional law. Section 1, Article 4 talks about no person shall be compelled to attend, erect, or support any religious ministry against their consent. Okay, that's state constitutional law. Okay, here you have Goldsmith coming in, and here's how they did it. First, you had the Hudson Institute, a Washington-based think tank, move into Indiana. Okay, that was to help out with a little... the details of it. But you basically had three major players. You had a politician named Stephen Goldsmith. You had the Indiana Civil Liberties Union, the only legal agency that challenges constitutionality laws concerning church and state. And you had the Indianapolis Star. Between these three, you had the politician start funneling money to religious organizations. You had the ICLU, who at the time was headed by Sheila Kennedy, a fellow Jew like Goldsmith, whose job was not to challenge it, or not to assist citizens like myself to challenge it. And then you had the Indianapolis Star doing nothing but promoting good things and propaganda about this policy or whatnot, and refusing to publish any kind of controversy or challenge to it. Between these three agencies, the ICLU, the Indianapolis Star, and Goldsmith, you had a way of going around constitutional law, changing constitutional law, and making law without the will or even the consent of the people.
What role did the seizing of the Indianapolis Baptist Temple play in that? Did they object, or were they onto something, or were they just resisting the power?
Well, here's the problem. You had Greg Dixon in Baptist Temple targeted for his religious speech. It's like an outlawed Protestant pulpit. His sermons, and I've been there, and my son actually attended the school there. His sermons were not very complimentary of Washington. He was telling it like it is. And everybody knows that that is why he was targeted to have his church seized. Okay. The interesting thing is Frank Anderson, the boss who eliminated me from my federal position as a police officer, was that he's the one who also seized the Baptist temple. Now, here's the interesting thing. We're at a time of war, and our troops cannot even return fire on the enemy that is shooting at them from a mosque because of Washington's respect for their sanctuary. But yet, here's a time of peace, a group of peaceful people who didn't raise a hand against them that had their sanctuary seized and bulldozed by a government in retaliation for its speech. Okay? And this is in a state that was funneling money to the Roman Catholic Archdiocese. The same state seizes and bulldozes a Protestant sanctuary. Now, if that isn't cause and justification for conflict, I don't know what is. And somebody needs to do something quickly, because there are Protestants out there who are not going to roll over so easy to the government bulldozing and seizing their church by force.
Now, yeah, you mentioned that, seizing that by force. Didn't the government surround the Indianapolis Baptist Temple with snipers?
They had all kinds of people there. I was there a couple times on the outside. They used force. The U.S. Marshals came in full gear. They was ready, because there was rumors of some militia in there. And there's not too many people that are fond of a government seizing a place, knowing it was in retaliation for a speech, especially when they give such special accommodation to Muslim sanctuaries in respect for their holy places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for those listeners, know that's one of my little against my grain things, because I was well aware of the churches not coming to the aid of the Indianapolis Baptist Temple, not even writing letters to the editor on that, because they were too busy trying to continue in their little churches and their bean suppers, whatnot, and they didn't really want to get together. And isn't that a sort of commandment? Aren't they supposed to be? Aren't different churches supposed to be brothers and sisters or not? I mean, are you a Christian, or what's your view?
I'm a Protestant raised Pentecostal Assembly of God type, mm-hmm. and.
Aren't all y'all brothers and sisters, though?
We're all spiritual family, and it's just a shame. And that's the problem with this. I like to call it welfare for the church. This faith based initiative, to where the money goes to the churches. All of a sudden, you'll find churches afraid to speak. Number one, because they see what happened to the Baptist Temple, and it doesn't really pay to speak out against the government, no matter what it is. Because now they're on the payroll, and they're the church is on welfare, and it shows the condition of the church.
So you're saying then that this local guy here in Indianapolis, Stephen Goldsmith, started mixing. Start funneling money locally to different religions, and then, for those who don't know, then he was promoted to George Bush's to lead the faith-based initiatives in Washington. Is that because it was such a success here?
Well, they claimed it was a success, and they said that there was no challenge and no controversy, and it was such a huge success that after Mayor Goldsmith did it with the Front Porch Alliance, then the governor got into the act with the Build Indiana Fund. Now, there's a lot of things that really went wrong with this experiment, but nobody's talking about them, obviously. The problem with the Build Indiana Fund with Governor O'Bannon is that there was no accountability. In other words, there could be no paper trail as to which religious denomination or religious establishment received majority of the money. In other words, did the Roman Catholics get 75% of the money, and Protestants and Muslims get a certain percent? There was no track record kept, because that would prove a violation of constitutional law that there was a preference made. Mm-hmm. So nobody was tracking exactly where the money was going, and once politicians know that there's money out there and there's no way of tracking it, the corruption became crazy. And the amazing thing is Indiana was in a surplus situation until this experiment came along, and now we're in a very, very bad situation. Nobody knows where the money went, and of course, you know, legislators come up with this legislation to protect them from any kind of prosecution for illegally use of taxpayer dollars. It's a mess here in Indiana.
It's the same kind of story that seems to come down from long ago.
Yes, everybody, it's the same kind of story from long ago.
Friends haven't caught me together.
It's the same old gods, the same old boss, and you know who I'm talking about. Coming back at you, paganism, masonry. We have been finding out so much here at the Edge Radio broadcast this evening on our line, right here at a mic, I suppose, not on our line, and a mic in our studio. Stephen Schroeder's coming back, and I'll tell you what, if you're hypnotized, you need to get out of there, because they've got a destiny for you. Stephen Schroeder, welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, we were talking about what you've done. You've done more than just pray about it. You've actually been jailed for desecrating their pagan statues. Tell us about your jailing process there.
Well, at the state capitol, like I said, they had the Ten Commandments up there, and I was raised, you know, religious or whatnot, and I knew the commandments, and what I saw was wrong, and I tried every legal means to have them. I give them 3 months to remove it, and it's one of those things that they won't do anything about it, and they didn't want to make it an issue, so it was a matter of keep on hitting it until it does become an issue. And it's funny, after the tablets were actually toppled and destroyed, they still didn't do anything about it. It was 6 months later. I finally contacted the Indiana Jewish Post and Opinion, being the Indianapolis Star wouldn't, you know, tell the truth about the matter, and let them know that the reason that the state wasn't doing anything about it was because they were the ones violating the law. That the reason they weren't throwing me in jail is because they were the ones violating the law, and they were the ones desecrating the sacred text of God. Mm-hmm. And if they wanted to do something about it, come get me. And it wasn't until 6 months later, they made it sound like in the Indianapolis Star that I was caught on video, and they came and got me, but that's totally the wrong thing. It was 6 months later that they actually decided to do something, because I got vocal with it and was actually throwing the gauntlet down, saying, this is what it's all about. This is what's happening. Let's take it to court. Let's debate it in a public forum. Let's make it to Indiana history.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it sounds like you said it took them 6 months to prosecute you, even if you told them you were the one desecrating the statues.
They knew all along. It's just like the Pan statue. I recently went down there during that pagan pride thing, and went into the War Memorial, and there was an officer there, and he knew who I was, and I was talking about, you know, why these, you know, whimsical statues up here, and he knew who I was, and said, you know, why don't you do me a favor, why don't you just hold off on doing anything to Pan for 2 years until I can retire. They know who I am. I'm not shy about it, and I'm you know, I've done it before, and I'll do it again. I will go to jail. They can remove my freedom, but as long as, you know, what you're doing is right, and what it's, you know, when God tells you to do something, you can't really sit there and debate about it. They ended up coming getting me and throwing me in jail, and I did the time for it. And Judge Barker, the federal judge downtown, ruled that it was unconstitutional, that Governor O'Bannon's historic legislation about disciplining the Ten Commandments was unconstitutional. And, of course, the state appealed and spent more money that we didn't have as a state to try to force their will, and went to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals two different times. And the whole complete Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals agreed that it was unconstitutional. So, basically, I was the first, you could say, religious prisoner in this conflict between the Protestants and the New World Order.
That is amazing. You took the man to court and you won. And I know that a lot of people talk about things. They talk about the end times and you know, the things to come and whatnot. And most of us don't have any idea what that looks like when we get closer. But it sounds like you were so close to the fire. Yeah, you were not burned. You were actually vindicated, because you proved that the state was violating the constitutional laws here in Indiana and Indianapolis. Probably even, I think you could probably make that case against Washington, D.C., too, as well, couldn't you?
Well, see, here's what the problem is. The experiment of Goldsmith was so successful, as they say, and O'Bannon's same thing of funneling money to religious organizations was so successful that Goldsmith got promoted to... Now, here's the funny thing about those three key players I was talking about, the Indianapolis Star and the ICLU and Goldsmith. Goldsmith gets promoted to Washington to be an advisor to the president on this faith-based initiative so he could implement it on a national level. The ICLU head, Sheila Kennedy, she got rewarded with a $1 million-plus grant for investigating the constitutionality of what Goldsmith was doing, even though she had already ruled there was nothing wrong with it. Okay, and then you had the Indianapolis Star, who had one of their reporters, John Kroll, take over the helm of the ICLU. So everybody got something out of their little conspiracy as far as changing constitutional law. Now it's being implemented on a national level by executive order, of all things. The constitutional laws of state and federal constitutional laws have been usurped by the decree of George Bush, with the help of Stephen Goldsmith, to change constitutional law to start funneling money to religious organizations. Just because they had already broken the law, they had to change the law to make them innocent. And not only that, it really helps out their image if they're pushing for these religious displays. It conceals the fact that they are pagan to the core and have a pagan foundation.
Wow, so you force them to change their law.
Yeah, it's the laws are there on the books. It's just a matter of enforcing the law against them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, laws are only laws if they're for everybody and they're enforced equally. Mm-hmm. And you can't have a group of powerful men who's involved in a secret satanic organization calling the shots. When you think about Indianapolis, the growth of the city was impaired from the very beginning by Masonic legislation that prevented any building south of the monument to be taller than this statue of their goddess. They didn't want a shadow cast on their goddess. So you got the south side of Indianapolis in like poverty when the north side of Indianapolis is booming, you know, with Carmel and all the rich types, because the city wasn't allowed to grow in balance because of a Masonic legislation giving honor to a goddess.
Well, that's interesting you say that, too. For those of you who've never been here, we have we keep talking about this statue, right? We call it the Monument Circle, and I think you alluded to the circle in the 6 mile square here earlier in the first hour. But for those of you who don't know, on the south side of that circle is Stephen Schroeder's right. It is sort of a poverty area. But what's building that area up now, as strange as that is Lilly, which is obviously one of the world's largest drug makers, pharmaceutical company whose root word is pharmacia, whose root word is witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
That's the base root of pharmaceuticals. So here we have witchcraft booming on the south side. Of course, you know, the Indianapolis being this central location, we've had the Dalai Lama come here. We've had, of course, the gigantic Scottish Rite Temple here. We've had, we have a Hindu, what do you call those things? A mosque? I don't know what you call them. Hindu, they worship some kind of cow god, something there. I don't know what's going on there. But you have all these sort of religious headquarters. I guess if you had a map of Indiana, there's a lot of strange stuff pointing right here to this city.
Yeah, like when you drive on the east side going around the city, you'll see a Catholic structure, and then you'll see this, it looks like a mosque, but it's really a theater. So it gives you the appearance that you have all these religious communities. You know, it's like you have the War Memorial there, and then you got the Catholic Church on the left, and you have the mosque on the right. It just looks like everybody's in harmony, and it's just a facade. It's polytheism is what it is. You have, okay, now you have an executive order to where the churches get money, so naturally the churches aren't going to be speaking out. Mm-hmm. But the faith-based initiatives, and it's amazing that churches are, well, it's not amazing that churches are all for it because, of course, they're getting paid, but it's just amazing that Christian people have no problem with a government that's officially declaring through the faith-based initiatives that all religions are equal, all gods and goddesses are created equal, and that citizens will pay and support and finance these religious ministries against their consent, which is against constitutional law, state constitutional law, especially here in Indiana, that all religions are equal, and not basically. The faith-based initiatives, summed up in a nutshell, is we shall have other gods, and that's a violation of the commandment. It's amazing how George Bush and the secret societies and the Skull and Bones has convinced the church to disobey the voice of God and obey the voice of Washington.
Yeah, now let's talk about this Supreme Court nominee, John Roberts. Now, there's an Indiana connection right there, and of course, he ends up coming from Harvard. Is there a Skull and Bones activity over there in Harvard with old John Roberts? I'll tell you what, if you're listening out there in radio land, or on the internet, go do a Google search on John Roberts. Somebody tell me, is this character, is he a member of Skull and Bones? Stephen Schroeder, is he some sort of payoff to Indiana to have him even nominated?
Well, Indiana is not only the crossroads of America. This is, like the Indianapolis Star wrote recently, that the pagans are watching Indianapolis. Everybody's watching Indianapolis and Indiana for the conflict and the controversy that's taking place here. So no doubt having somebody with Indiana ties would help out in these coming court cases to confirm if in fact the government can get away with changing constitutional laws. And when you understand that George Bush is a bonesman, and basically no matter who won the election, you would have the Skull and Bones or the Brotherhood of Death calling the shots from the White House, you know that their agenda and their religious agenda is going to be that of the Skull and Bones, and their allegiance is to the secret society, not to the American people. And it seems like the government of We the People has been usurped or pirated, you could say, by these flying the banner of the Skull and Bones, and the government has taken from We the People and given to secret powerful organizations whose agenda is to establish the new world order, to put the capstone on it, to where all religions are equal and all gods and goddesses are equal, and basically to establish polytheism once again as the preferred religious establishment of the state.
Stephen Schroeder, obviously you took the man to court. And we use that term loosely here, the pagans, the secret agenda of the government. You exposed them, and it took months for them to figure out how to even prosecute you because they couldn't without incriminating their self. And you got them to change law, and they're still trying to work around constitutional law. It's amazing they haven't carried you away. But do you consider yourself either a point man or maybe the tip of the spear of the end time sort of resistance to the forcing of paganism across the spectrum of America?
Well, whatever he needs me to do, I'm willing to do, and it's all a matter of just what's right is right. And I believe in law, and I believe in order, and I believe there's a right thing way of doing things. But people need to realize the government of we the people is being dissolved. All your rights and freedoms are being eliminated. And it's really amazing. You know, the basic rule of law enforcement as far as detective work, in order to see who committed a crime, is to see who benefits the most from it. And after we see who benefited the most from 911, from like Hal Burton and all of the George Bush's buddies, we understand the people who benefited the most from it are probably involved with it or had something to do with it. And once you see that, I'm saying, you know, give us back our freedoms. We'll secure our own homeland.
And we've got a nightmare going on right here in the city of Indianapolis. But with all nightmares, the light of day will cause it to disperse into nothingness. Hello, everybody. My name is Daniel Ott. You're listening to the Edge Radio broadcast. And looks like we've got somebody who went to the Google search. Let's see what they have to say. We're trying to find out about John Roberts. Let's see. I don't know about that. Okay, nothing yet so far. Bring it back into studio with us is Stephen Schroeder. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
All right, well, you've exposed the plans of the enemy, and you're talking about this 6 mile square being basically, is all the lands been measured out like that, or just Indiana?
Well, the 13 colonies took over the, one time it was called the Indiana Territories, which are the five states consisting of the Northwest Territories. And that's where they started mapping off that general area, the midst of the guard. You could basically say those five states, they gridded off into 6x6 squares as far as the boundaries. And that's the only area that I know of where they did that.
Mm. What's ahead for you there, Stephen Schroeder? Are you going to be desecrating any more of these pagan statues here in India? No place?
Well, I look at it like this. The line has been drawn in the sand. People are becoming aware of it, with or without the local media. People are understanding that the state is accommodating pagans, giving special preference to them, allowing them to desecrate what is ours. They need to do something about this, and they need to do something quickly, because this is desecration. You can get anybody together. You can lay it on the table. It's an open shut case. It's desecration, and they're getting away with it. And until they do that, there's going to be conflict. And the decisions they've been making lately is doing nothing but dividing the community into a situation that's, like I said, if you can funnel money to Roman Catholics, tax dollars, and get away with it, and then be able to have the power to change the laws, and in the same state, bulldoze and seize a church by force, a Protestant church by force, you're causing a division that, you know, probably what caused the conflicts that are taking place in Ireland today.
Hmm. I'll tell you what, you have proven, though, that you can resist the New World Order and its agenda and survive, because evidently they're probably afraid of you now because you've exposed their evil plans. I think I've heard other people on this show say that once the plans are revealed, that they seem to change them. They try to find a way around it. But you've proven that you can resist them, you can win, and I think it should give hope to anybody out there that feels there's nothing that can be done. And in fact, I think when they bulldozed that Baptist temple, Indianapolis Baptist temple, didn't they split up into six churches instead of one and back in the face of the beast?
I'm not sure exactly what happened to the church afterwards. It's just sad in a state of Indiana. You have what's taking place here, and nobody actually seems like they know what's going on. The ones that do want to put their head down in the sand. It's not a situation that's going to go away. And right now it seems like, well, there's nothing really wrong, but they can't see the beast as long as they're sleeping with it. And until the time they stand up, comply with the word of God, be separate, you know, stand up and say desecration is not going to be tolerated. Then they'll be able to see. And until then, they're not going to see the beast, but I guarantee once they stand and once they comply with the word and once they become separate, the beast will show his true colors.
Mm-hmm. And you look that beast right in the eye, and I guess it's sort of like the three children of Israel. They were in the fire, but there was somebody else in there with them. And I tell you what, I'd rather be in the fire with somebody like that in there with me than being outside the fire without that kind of protection going on. Hey, here's a question from the Fast Blast coming to you. It says, is the God of nature The same God of the Bible. And here's part two of that question for you, Stephen. This person says they recently attended a public display of the Ten Commandments hosted by Judge Roy Moore, and they saw a reference to the God of nature along with quotes from some of the founding fathers.
Now, this is where the deception plays. Everybody knows about Roy Moore, and they make it seem like, you know, he's a champion of the Ten Commandments. But what that was is the Ten Commandments controversy that started here in Indianapolis. He jumped on the bandwagon and pretty much tried to want to, show that the Ten Commandments is a good thing to be in public display. I don't recall any time in the Bible where the Ten Commandments were supposed to be on display. The only time it was ever displayed is when the Philistines captured it from Israel and put it in their temple with Dagon. And there was consequences to follow that. We have a situation that needs to be addressed easily. The question again, the first part of the question, the God of nature. Here's the interesting thing. In the Constitution, there is a mention of a specific name of a deity, and it's the God of nature and of nature's God. And if you want to see a good picture of what the God of nature looks like, you can look at the Indianapolis Star, and you'll see there's a picture of Pan, and the headlines is, even in part, God of nature isn't safe. You can see a picture of the God of nature, and that's Pan, and Pan is the God of nature. And unfortunately, you have a constitution that gives preference to this God of nature, this God of earth, or if you look at the Egyptian origin, the God of the underworld, the God of death, and that's why you have the Brotherhood of Death pretty much controlling the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before we had you on the show, I was doing a little background check. Checking on you with our in conjunction with our program director, and we went to the Indianapolis Star website and we did a search on you. Just put your name in there, and you came up a couple times. So if you out there in the worldwide listening on the internet or radio land, however you're listening to this show, if you want to see exactly what he got into and how that was written up, you can go to the Indianapolis Star website and find out. Here's a question. Well, let's see here. This person here email says that they consider you a sort of a watchman for the saints. And so do you consider yourself a watchman, Stephen Schroeder?
I'll be whatever it is he needs me to be. Our mission, our goal right now is to get the Protestant church prepared as a bride. The wedding between the church and state will not stand because the state has declared itself to be a god and we can't have any other gods. And the church is supposed to be the bride of the king, and we have to prepare the church. And our goal is to get all the Protestant denominations to be under one banner, under one title, and that is the saints. Until we get a united front, we're not going to be able to take care of this problem we have of these pagans organizing and mobilizing to try to take what belongs to God.
So you're saying that the usual church shenanigans like bean suppers, fish fries, and garage sales type of thing isn't really helping prepare the church for the end times?
The church better stop playing church and realize this is a real world situation down here, and we do have a real enemy. And the Protestants, foundation of Protestants, is to protest. And unfortunately, if they don't have an enemy, then they pretty much divide between themselves and they protest among themselves, and that's where you get the denominations and whatnot.
Well, Steve Schroeder, don't the church believers, don't they consider Jesus already won all the battles and they don't have to fight anymore?
Well, if you read the final book, you'll find that the battle is far from over and it's just beginning. And the only way we're going to be able to win this battle is to get God on our side. And right now the state of the church is in such a bad situation. It's to the point to where the church needs to realize that they're asking for revival. They're asking for peace. They're asking for things that aren't really self-centered. They're asking for things. And God said, you know, if your son asked you for a piece of bread, you wouldn't give him a rock. And we've asked, but yet the Bible says they have not because they ask not. Well, they've been asking, but it seems to me that God's not hearing. And that's probably, more than likely, because the church is serving the God or putting the trust in the same God of Washington. They have, you know, the symbols and images and gods of Washington on their podiums in their sanctuary and whatnot. Until we clean house, until we get rid and separate, until we comply with the Word of God, until we obey the Word of God, we're going to be obeying the voice of the serpent. And as long as we're obeying the voice of the serpent, God can't hear our prayers. God can't assist us. God gave us a final warning: be separate, come out from among them, be separate, and I will be your God. I will be your Father. You'll be my sons and daughters. Mm-hmm. And then we'll get to the point where we understand that there is a God. He is real, and He is on our side, and we can do battle.
And so what you're saying is then that they're asking for these certain things, but they're apparently asking the wrong God, and they don't even know it.
Unfortunately, you know, that's the bottom line, because I've been in churches, and I've heard them ask for revival, and I've heard them ask for things that a normal God would give, but yet, you know, the church is a sad situation. I mean, their focus is on the size of the church and, you know, handicapped parking, and it's just amazing that the church is powerless, and the church needs to realize that God is not hearing their prayers, obviously, and the church has become powerless. And until we obey the word of God, we are obeying the voice of the serpent. And as long as we're obeying the voice of the serpent, God cannot hear our prayers. He cannot assist us. He cannot do what he needs to do. And all he's wanting us to do is comply with his word. Because once we comply with his word and be separate from that which is defiling and profaning and all those things that the Old Testament and the New Testament warn us to be separate from, it won't happen.
So, aren't they commanded, though? Aren't they commanded to resist the devil?
If you resist the devil, he'll flee, and that's how we can win, and that's how I'm confident we have no problem, because it's just a matter of standing and resisting. It's not about physical, it's not about violence, it's about the Word of God, okay? And the Word of God is what does our battles for us, and all you got to do is mention it.
All right, well, you've proven that is the case, that they can rely on God to back them up in the event that they do challenge the demons that are or the gods of the land. But I guess what you're saying then is, suppose they're praying for revival and they say, okay, God give us revival, and then now let's go pass out the Easter eggs. You're saying that's mixing the profane with the holy, right?
Absolutely, and that's the saddest part about it.
Which is the God of fertility, right?
Exactly, with Easter and Ishtar and, you know, December 25th and worshiping the birthday of Christ. You got to understand, Christ, Lord, King, these are all titles, okay? Until we understand that, we need to understand who our Savior is, you know, and until we understand, you know, we got to stop worshiping what the pagans worship. We got to stop trying to accommodate the pagans and worship what they worship. Until the church cleanses itself from paganism, it's going to be part of paganism. And it's a tragedy. You asked a question yesterday, and I didn't catch it. It deserves an answer. What benefit would it be to cleanse Christianity of its pagan roots? You understand, King Saul lost the battle, okay, and fell on his own sword, committed suicide, basically, and lost the battle. And where was God? God was supposed to be on his side, but where was God? It happened because Saul consulted a sorceress to find out exactly the details of the battle instead of consulting God. That's having other gods. That's why it's the first commandment. We cannot have other gods. And this faith-based initiatives is saying, we shall have other gods. And that is where the fall of America lies. And we can't be deceived any longer. And the church is being manipulated and deceived by this satanic secret organization. We need to come out from among them and be separate and obey the word of God. Once we obey the voice of God, we won't be obeying the voice of the serpent, and then God will become a reality, and then he can move.
Wow. I'll tell you what, did I hear, I don't know if it was talking to you last week or maybe another guest or whatnot, because we had Ole Anthony talking about the shyksters. Is that a word? Shyksters talking about the televangelists. But is the 700 Club part of the faith-based? Did they take some funds from faith-based initiatives?
Yeah, they got a huge check. And you can usually tell which church gets the checks because all of a sudden they become a mouthpiece of Washington instead of the mouthpiece of God. Consider Pat Robertson here lately was on national television saying that the former mayor of New York City, a cross-dressing, pro-gay, pro-abortionist, would make a good president. Then you had Billy Graham on his last crusade saying Hillary Clinton would be a good president. Now here you have these spiritual endorsements by these televangelical lobbyists, I like to call them, to where they get money, and all of a sudden they're giving spiritual endorsements for people who are wicked and people know about it, and people are scratching their heads and trying to figure out what's going on. They need to wake up and realize what's going on, because if they can't see it now, they never will, and the deception of the church must stop.
Wow. You know, I have yet to see a copy of the requirements, because I'm sure if you're engaged getting funds with a government handout program like the Faith-Based Initiatives Funds Redistribution of Wealth Program, are there known requirements to get that check? Do they say that you shall not disparage certain groups in order to get this funds? You shall not speak bad of your government. You shall not talk about other faiths in a derogatory term. Have you seen any requirements list, or do you know of what that requirement is?
I don't know if there's any requirement list. I don't think they're keeping that good of a track record or a paper trail of it right now, simply because that would be the stumbling block for their little program to find out, you know, that one religious organization organization is getting so much more money than the other one. So it's not really the only requirement I believe is that, number one, you can't say anything bad about your government. And here of lately, the government has come down really hard on any kind of evangelical who's speaking out against Islam. Unfortunately, the foundation of Islam is that God beget not a son, and the foundation of Christianity is God did beget a son. Okay, the Bible says, "Who is a liar but he that denieth the son? He is Antichrist." That's saying the foundation of Islam is Antichrist. The Quran, Islam's holy book, chapter 19, verse 88 says, "Who is it is a monstrous thing that they say that God beget a son." And it's the only unforgivable sin of Islam. So you have these two forces in total opposition, but yet you have the president who's saying that God speaks through him of all things, saying the God of Islam and the God of the Bible is one and the same, or that all gods and goddesses are good and all religions are good and acceptable. I mean, he's speaking about polytheism and embracing polytheism and saying he speaks for God. We got to understand the God of Washington is the God of the underworld, the Egyptian God of the underworld, the God of death. And it's not the one and same God. And until we make a clarification that, you know, this fatherhood of God and brotherhood of man is the deception of the last days, we're not going to see it.
Yeah, and for those who didn't hear last week's program, when you talk about the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man is the creed of the Masons, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's their creed, and that's the deception that there is one God, and we're all brothers, and if somehow the Christians can compromise their beliefs or these other religions can compromise their beliefs, that somehow we'll have peace. But you got to understand, Cain and Abel were brothers, yet there was a homicide that happened simply because there was two different people listening to two different deities. And it doesn't matter what the Christians compromised, you're not going to have world peace until everybody understands there is only one Prince of Peace, there's only one Giver of Life, and the other is death and destruction. And we got to pick a side, and quick.
Yeah, I got a friend who listens to this show in France, and they tell me that that the European Union is basically being taken over by Islam now, and they're beginning to change the laws. And they said they look at the United States as, while it's a religious country, which the European Union is trying to eliminate the differences in religion. I guess they're ahead of us that way. But they said they're thankful that we do have morality here. At least we're slowing down the process. But it sounds to me like we have a plan to escalate that. In fact, I think they may even call that Eurabia now. So, hey, here's a very simple question. Somebody on the Fast Blast wants to know, Steve Schroeder, is it okay to refer to God as Lord?
Yeah, you know, Lord, Christ, God, there's nothing wrong with it. And there's been a lot of debate about, you know, the name of God, whether it's Yahweh, Yeshua, or Jehovah. There's enough division going on right now. We can simplify it. When God says, "You listen to me and you obey me, and I will be your father and you'll be my sons and daughters," we can break it down to its most basic form. He gave us the right to call him Abba, and that means daddy. And when he gives you the right to call the Creator daddy, I think that's the kind of terminology and that's the kind of words we need to understand and comprehend. Everything else will fall into place. You call him what you want, just make sure you call on him.
All right. Hey, we just got a little informational email here from someone out there in the listening land. Said there are surveys. And they said that all the states surveyed by the government were 6 miles by 6 miles, and then broken down into smaller sections. And it says they see now it makes sense that because George Washington was a Mason, how that all kind of fits. In other words, things are the way they are for a reason. And you know, that's the whole point of the Edge Radio broadcast, is there are reasons for what's going on, and some of these things are happening right in front of our face.
That's right. There was a point at the beginning, and it started at Ohio, and it happened in September, to where they went ahead and mapped that all out. The information that's in the books, there's so much information, and it's really hard to try to give it out on a radio. It's got to be a visual thing. I'm more than willing. Anybody wants this information, you know, contact me at the post office box or contact me at the email address, and I'll burn you a disc, and I'll get it out to you, and I'll come explain things. People need to know what's going on, and there's really no time to waste.
Mm. And let's talk about one of our favorite subjects, and that would be time frame, Stephen Schroeder. What's your idea of where, I mean, if you have the faith-based initiatives and you have the Islam issue and the war in Iraq and these kinds of things, it seems like the world's heading in a direction. What do you see the near future is becoming, or when's some kind of event going to happen that way? Or
it's always going to be later than you think. And unfortunately, with the conflicts that's coming up, and you see the divisions taking place in America and in Britain between the two major faiths, between Islam and Christianity, you got to understand the government's going to pick a side, And unfortunately, the government has picked a side. And when you understand what the religious agenda is of this government and its new world order, it fits in real good with Islam, because they both reject the cornerstone. They both reject Christ, Lord, Savior, mm-hmm. Jesus, Yeshua.
The Constitution say that you shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion, but are you saying that the faith-based initiative is a law that is respecting the establishment of different religions?
Absolutely. You have two basic establishments of religion. You got monotheism and polytheism. That's how basic it really is. And when the government gets in there and officially declares all religions as being equal and all gods and goddesses as being good, and that the citizens will have their labor taxed to support and maintain these religious ministries against their consent, that's a violation of constitutional law. And I think the people need to challenge it. It's just amazing you can get away with an executive order, and the Civil Liberties Union aren't challenging this to say, okay, for 200 years, plus, we haven't had money funneled to religious organizations. All of a sudden, it's acceptable, as if, you know, everybody in the past has been ignorant, and all of a sudden, somebody's been enlightened that this is an acceptable thing to happen, and it's going to dissolve everything that we've worked for.
I think I mentioned this last broadcast, but we're talking about the outline of a goat's head and the laying out of Washington, D.C. Is there, in Indianapolis, is there any outline that you could overlay a goat's head to, say the Monument Circle and the War Memorial and the Statue of Pan? Is there any sort of a shenanigan like that?
Well, the five-pointed star is interesting, because not only does it represent the goat head, the male aspect of it, it also represents the Venus. Downtown, the flag of Indianapolis itself, if you look at it, it is a five-pointed star in a circle in a crossroads. And it's interesting enough, when we went down there and started looking around, we found these flags flying upside down, which would make it an inverted pentagram. I mean, we found it at Safeco Insurance across from the Federal Obelisk, and then we went to the Columbia Club on the Circle, and it was flying upside down. Went to the city-county building, and the city-county building was flying its Indianapolis flag upside down. It's just real interesting how they can be flying a flag that is an inverted pentagram, and that is the goat head. And if you look at Washington, D.C., you'll see that the city layout, there is a huge five-pointed star, a pentagram, an inverted pentagram, to where its fifth point is touching the White House.
When you saw the flags flying upside down in Indianapolis on the same day, do you believe that were the Masons signaling each other, or were the Illuminati signaling each other? Was that some sort of holy day in the underworld?
I don't know if it's a holy day or bragging. I don't know exactly what they're doing, but I don't know if it's coincidental or not, because when you go to them and you explain to them, look, are you guys under duress? Because usually when you fly a flag upside down, they're under duress. And you tell them that their flag's flying upside down, you go back the next week, and it's that way again. There's something wrong. Even the Columbia Club refuses to turn theirs right side up. And if you want to head downtown real quick on the Circle and look at it, you'll see it's upside down even today.
Hmm. Here's a question. Have you ever heard of the Merovingian bloodline?
Just the reptilian and mammal bloodlines are the only one I know.
Wow. And just kind of off the cuff here, do you believe that any of our government leaders, do you believe any of them are not human?
Well, it's all according to whether you consider a reptilian bloodline. When we're talking about, there's two fathers down here and there's two types of beings down here, and whatever voice you obey, that's who your father is and that's who your bloodline is. The Bible specifically says you are of your father, the devil. Therefore, the devil is the reptile and he's the serpent of old. That is a reptilian bloodline. Whether you look at it from a physical sense or from a spiritual standpoint, you definitely have two different types of blood types down here, because you have two different types of fathers down here. So yes, I believe in a reptilian bloodline. I believe it's those who obey and hear the voice of their father, the devil.
Mm. Well, let me ask you about that. I think we got this question last week, and I didn't have time to get it in. If someone finds out, let's just say they are enlightened, they come out of the matrix, come out of the goo, they discover the truth, they research for themselves these things that you're saying, they see these connections, which are overwhelming evidence that something's going on, they come out of that, and let's just say they're of the reptilian bloodline, are they able to be translated into another bloodline?
Thank goodness for blood transfusions. When you accept the sacrifice that was made, you are born again, and that's the whole idea behind being born again. The nature of man is corrupted; it's fallen. You must be born again. It's a matter of accepting His blood sacrifice for you and getting indwelled with His blood. It's like a blood transfusion. So whatever blood you had before, if you find the Messiah and you accept Him, you get a blood transfusion, and you're part of the spiritual family. That's the beautiful thing about it.
Well, I guess that offers some of our listeners some hope. And I think one of the related questions we got was how if the deception, because I think there's something in the Bible. There is something in the Bible about the end time deception. But if it were possible, the very elect would be deceived. Well, how does a person know if they're not of this other bloodline? How is it? that they even know it if they're deceived.
That's what the Word of God's all about. You have two voices here. You have the voice of the Creator, and you have the voice of the Destroyer. The voice of the Creator is consistent, and the voice of the Destroyer is consistently contrary to that voice. It's pretty easy to know whether you're deceived or not. If you say all gods are good, and you reject that there's only one God and you shall not have any other gods, it's pretty easy to see anybody who's contrary to the Word of God is not of God.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the churches should get together and begin to resist current laws, or should they write their congressmen and say, stop it with the faith-based niches because they don't want their money supporting Islam?
That's where the line's going to be drawn. The churches need to get together and take the business seriously, and they need to understand there can't be any desecration without any kind of outcry from the people, letting them know that this is not tolerated, this cannot go on. It's time for the church to come together, to be one. You think about it. That was the king's last final dying request, was that we would become one, even as he and the Father are one. It's time for the church to become one.
Wow. Okay. All right, this final question, we'll try to get it in real quick. First of all, do you believe there is a such thing as a rapture?
I believe there's a catching away. I call it the second exodus. Just like the first is spiritual, physical, and the second is spiritual. Just like you had a first exodus, the second exodus is going to be a spiritual exodus, because we don't have no wilderness to walk for 40 years. We have it'll be like a doorway opened up to where we can be caught away. Some people want to be caught away. It doesn't matter to me. I'd like to stick around for the final show.
All right. Well, it sounds to me like you're really kind of calling for unity to straighten some of these things out. And you faced the heat, and you have beaten the system. And you've proven that the story is still true, where the children of Israel were in the fire and somebody's with them. Somebody must be with you, Stephen Schroeder, with all these acts of desecration against the pagan gods here locally. I would think people in other cities where they have pagan deities that's all around their city, they should do the same thing.
And all praise belongs to Yeshua, and all glory. And it is time for the church to get ready and take it serious and realize there is a real enemy out there, and it's time to stop playing church.
Okay. All right, Stephen Schroeder, thanks for coming on the Edge Radio Broadcast. Can we have you on again sometime?
Anytime. You name it, I'll be here.